Welcome to Mumble Jumble, where we talk about ideas with people that make the world go round. I'm your host, William Yuan Yi. Karen Shi is a stand-up comedian and essayist who currently writes for Late Night with Seth Meyers. She's written for the Golden Globes, contributed regularly to The New Yorker, and her work has been featured in The New York Times, The Washington Post, and more. She is a personal inspiration for me as an Asian American who's doing incredible things in the world of comedy and entertainment. Karen Shi, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast with me today.
Oh my gosh, yeah, thank you for having me.
Where are you from and where did you grow up?
I grew up in California. I am from a small suburb outside of San Francisco.
Oh, cool.
Where are you from?
LA.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so also California. I guess, how did you become interested in comedy in the first place?
I basically just started watching television comedy when I was in like 8th or 9th grade and just thought it was like the coolest thing. And at that point I was still interested in becoming other things, but when I got to college, I was like, oh, I mostly enjoy comedy. So yeah, went for it.
Did you grow up in a comedy loving household?
No, not really. We didn't really watch any TV. And so a lot of people in my family are very funny. And so I think we grew up joking around and being silly a lot. And like, my mom is really good at accents. My mom's from Korea and she's really good at regional accents in Korea and stuff like that. And so she's very silly and we laughed a lot, but no one really ever thought about television comedy as a thing that existed.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Asian parents. Were they completely supportive of a career in comedy?
Yeah, they were pretty much from the get-go. They were very excited for me. When I was in high school, I wanted to take improv classes and stuff. And yeah, my parents would like drive me to and from San Francisco on the weekends and like during the week, I would take the train there and, you know, they were really supportive of it. And to the point where even if they didn't know quite what I was talking about, they would try and ask like, hey, like what shows do you like? Like what shows do you want to write for someday? So that they could try to watch it and understand what that world was like.
That's yeah. Really cool. Yeah. Was there a comic you watched growing up that you really identified with?
You know, I think I didn't really watch stand-up until I got to college. I watched a lot of The Daily Show, which back then was Jon Stewart, and then right after that ended would be The Colbert Report. And I watched, like, The Office and Parks and Recreation and 30 Rock and stuff.
Those shows, The Daily Show and Parks and Rec even, are very, like, political. Did you grow up with an early interest in politics as well?
Yeah, I was really interested in politics before I was interested in comedy. And so political satire felt like a very natural mix of two things I really liked. Yeah, I watched Life of Brian, which is this Monty Python movie. It's really great. And I remember that was the first time I'd ever seen really intense satire of something that I thought couldn't be made fun of, which is the church. And so that like blew my brain wide open. Yeah.
How old were you when you saw that?
I think I was 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, maybe 14, something like that.
So at Harvard, I heard that you were initially interested in speech writing and then you switched into comedy. I guess, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah,
shift?
I mean, I wasn't really interested in speech writing. Like, that wasn't my career. I went to Harvard very open-minded about what I could do with my life. And so I liked politics and my favorite part of politics was speeches and speech writing. But I was also really interested in math and I was really interested in like English literature and American history. It was just sort of all over the place. And so I was very excited to go there because it's like a really amazing school, but also a very liberal artsy school. And so I could take classes in pretty much whatever I wanted. And then pretty quickly, as I was doing a lot of extracurriculars in comedy, I was like, oh, this is the thing that brings me the most amount of joy. And I'm really passionate about it. And I think I can make this into a career.
When was that moment when you thought, I can actually make this into a career?
I don't know if there was like a moment. I think I just realized, I was like, oh, I'm getting some pretty good feedback on it and I'm doing it a lot and I can feel myself improve. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like my parents and also the general atmosphere at Harvard is very much like, find something you genuinely love to do and then work really hard at it. And so probably early on in my freshman year, I realized I wanted naturally it was just sort of like, I was picking extracurriculars that were all comedy related in some way. So I really dedicated myself to that.
What comedy clubs did you do when you were on campus?
I did stuff with this group called IGP, which is an improv group. That was like most of my life in college. And I did this sketch show called Sketch that happened once a year there was this group called On Harvard Time that did like sketches for a bit, and they were originally modeled to be like The Daily Show for school. But I think while I was there, it changed into just producing sketches. Oh man, I can't remember what else. I did this group called Satire 5, which was a group that was inspired by The Onion, and so they did satirical articles for like campus life.
What did you study at Harvard? How do you think that helped your comedy career?
I mean, I think anything you do helps comedy, just because comedy can be about anything. I studied history and literature, and I loved it. I loved college so much. It was the best. And I think my main takeaways from history and literature that I think helped me in all aspects of my life, but especially are helpful in comedy, is we read a ton of stories, and we read a ton of fiction and nonfiction. And so I got very good at sort of figuring out how narratives worked, if that makes sense. And also, one of the main things we did in history and literature, it's a very sort of lefty department, and a lot of it was figuring out like, hey, okay, which voices are missing in history? So let's go back and read those people's literature to figure out what the history of that time period was like for other people who weren't, you know, like rich white men. And I think knowing who the speaker is and knowing who gets to speak, and that sort of sense of privilege in writing is really, really important and good to know, because in comedy you'd never want to punch down at people. But yeah, I guess the main thing was that it was just really genuinely a very enjoyable thing to study, and I got to read a lot of books.
So on the topic of rich white men, being an Asian American in comedy is a pretty unique experience, especially since there aren't a lot of Asian Americans in entertainment at the moment.
I think there are a lot more now, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Was there a role model for you growing up?
Who was Asian American?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Mindy Kaling was very huge for me, just because also I loved The Office so much, and getting to find out that she was not only acting in it, but also writing for it. And I remember, I think I was in high school when her first book came out, and she had her own show after that. And it was just, I was like, oh, cool, she can do anything. That's awesome. Yeah.
So how did you get from Harvard Square to Late Night with Seth Meyers? What happened in between?
When I was at Harvard, I started freelance writing for a bunch of magazines and websites just for fun. And so I was writing for like McSweeney's and The New Yorker starting when I was a sophomore in college. So by the time I graduated, I'd sort of built up, without intending to, I'd sort of built up like a portfolio essentially of published pieces. So after I graduated, I did like a short acting program, and I can't remember what else I did. I did this writing residency in Vermont. I was sort of just like fooling around. I was also thinking of maybe going to grad school because I really like school. And then at one point I was like, oh, I should just try and get this started, and yeah, move to New York.
That's awesome. Do you think that you're a naturally funny person?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm pretty, I think I'm pretty serious most of my life. No, I don't think I'm very naturally funny. I think I like being goofy and I like doing bits with friends, but I think especially my friends in comedy are all much funnier than I am. So I really just like being silly with them and goofing off, yeah.
That's so cool. Do you, I guess a lot of people say that people have like a stand-up comic persona and then like an offstage persona.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's the same for you? Like there's a sort of a dichotomy between the two?
That's a great question. That's something I'm still grappling with. I honestly think it's pretty much the same. And yeah, I think on stage, the main difference is that obviously I'm the only person talking and I have to talk for a very long amount of time. And I think in real life, I wouldn't really do that at like a party. Like being the idea of being the life of a party is like horrifying to me. But yeah, I think it's pretty much just who I am.
Between performing stand-up, doing improv, writing satire, are they very different from each other?
That's a great question. I think they use different muscles. Yeah, I now only do improv like once a month, and I only do it because I really like the other improvisers I do shows with. I think that's definitely a very different muscle from like sitting down and writing satire, and also very different from writing jokes to do in stand-up. But I think they all play off each other really well, and so I think because I did improv for so long, being in a writer's room right now, I feel a lot more comfortable about like just shooting out ideas and not saying no to people's ideas immediately and being like, oh, like maybe that could be something. But yeah, I mean they are very different, I think, too. Yeah.
So on the topic of being in a writer's room, you write for Seth Meyers right now. Can you talk me through what a day in the life of that looks like?
Yeah, so they're very loosely two different groups of the writers, and basically just means, like, are you focusing on monologue jokes or are you focusing on sketches? But also you can go back and forth. So I'm on the monologue team, but I write sketches for the show too periodically. I think workday normally starts at 9:30. Most people are there a little bit earlier, and you just write jokes throughout the day. You have a couple meetings with Seth throughout the day, and he reads through things and, like, picks out, you know, jokes he likes and stuff he wants to use, and then you go back and write more. There are these two writer's assistants who read through all the news and pull all the headlines that they think are the most important or wacky, and we write jokes based off of that, and then also have to read a ton of the news and, like, watch it as it happens just to make sure we're getting the full context of things. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then we have, like, rehearsal with Seth and a monologue audience around, like, 4, and then we have final jokes submitted at 5:30, and then the show starts taping at 6:30.
I think something that interests me about joke writing is that some people say it's an art, and I definitely think it is, but there's also something maybe formulaic about it, because it seems that you're able to consistently produce funny material day in, day out.
I think formulas are very artistic. I, like, studied math a lot, and I feel like anytime people are like, oh yeah, this is formulaic, how boring. I'm like, no, that's really beautiful.
that's really very interesting. Cool.
Yeah, and it's also, if anything, it feels much more like a sport almost, because once you build that muscle, you get very good at just writing a ton of jokes every day. Much like you don't know what's going to happen in a soccer game, but you train for it anyway constantly. Yeah.
Something that's interesting now about today is that a lot of people actually get their news from political satire, honestly.
Right, yeah, which is probably unhealthy for society. They shouldn't do that, yeah.
But I guess in a sense, you know, I think Jon Stewart called himself a fake journalist, but I think in many respects he was a primary source of news for a lot of people. Do you think that's, you know, an important responsibility to bear? Do you think about that when you're writing jokes?
I mean, I think it should be honest, right? Like, I can't make up a news story, but I don't think comedians should be considered journalists. That feels insane because they're actual journalists. Yeah, I think that would be like reading a fiction book and being like, oh, this is just history. And you're like, no, you have to know that. Especially right now in this political climate, if you're just getting the news from comedy shows, that's kind of immoral because so many awful things are happening. And as a citizen or a resident of this country, you should be more aware.
What were you doing immediately before writing for Seth? Were you doing a lot of stand-up in the area?
Yeah, I still am doing a lot of stand-up. I do like one or two shows almost every night.
Where do you usually perform?
Truly all over the place. I live in Brooklyn, so right now I especially try and do a lot of shows in Brooklyn just to get home faster afterwards. But yeah, I don't ever want to do shows that will be like a 2-hour commute, you know what I mean? Especially because it'll be like a 15-minute set, and I'm like, that's not worth it. Yeah, I'll do shows really wherever. Yeah.
I feel like stand-up is one of those things that a lot of people really want to try, but I guess for a lot of people it's horrifying.
I guess so, yeah.
Did you have that experience of having to get over those initial nerves? Do you still get nervous?
I mean, I get nervous for everything constantly, but I would say I first started doing stand-up because I had just moved to New York, didn't really know many people here, and I had only had a background in writing and improv.
So no stand-up at Harvard?
I didn't do stand-up at Harvard. I started stand-up 2 years ago. And the reason I started doing stand-up is I was like, oh, I want to meet more comedians, and I want to say these jokes that I'm writing all day long because I don't know enough people to do improv shows with. And I also, the classes at UCB are very expensive. And so it just felt like a very ridiculous way to go about doing comedy when I was like, hey, I'm writing jokes all day and I can do these shows for free. So I started doing stand-up as a writer, and I think because of that I wasn't as nervous about being bad at it, and then kept doing it and realized, oh, I actually really enjoy doing this. So the initial fear, that part wasn't there, but I do get nervous before, especially if it's like a bigger show or if I know someone I know is going to be there, like that stuff is very nerve-wracking.
Have you ever had any like bomb moments as a stand-up comedian?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think everybody does, yeah.
And that's just part of the trait.
Yeah, you have to be okay with it. I saw a comedian who I really admire who is very successful and like has specials and stuff. I saw him bomb really badly maybe a couple weeks into me starting to do stand-up, and that was like the most inspiring thing. He had a full hour-long show where he was trying out new material, and I want to say about 60% of it didn't work. And I was like, wow. Oh, that's awesome. It's effort. Like, you know, it's not like a natural talent thing. It's just based on effort. And that was really inspiring. Yeah.
So I guess you've done so much already. What what do you see for yourself in the future, 5-10 years down the road?
That's nice of you. I don't know. I really hope I get to keep doing this. I hope I get to do, I like movies, I like books, so those are things I'm thinking about. Yeah, I want to get a dog at some point. And I try and make sure I do a lot of not comedy things, so I want to.
Oh, what is that? What does that look like?
I mean, I've been taking French classes, and I box and like other things just to make sure I'm not only thinking about comedy all the time, which feels very unhealthy. Yep.
So I think something that I find interesting is, I think there was an Atlantic piece about this, but this is sort of more political comedy related, but why there's no conservative Jon Stewart. Have you ever thought about why comedy is very liberal?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that. That's a great question. In my mind, and I'm probably very biased as someone who's on the left, but I feel like the quote unquote like liberal perspective that's so much of comedy is also in comedy is very inherently about punching up and making fun of people in power and trying to sort of do that to take away their power. And as somebody who is sort of on the left, I feel like, oh yeah, that's also the end goal of this like movement, quote unquote, too, you know? And so it feels like someone who's a fascist would hate being made fun of, which is like extreme far right side. So I imagine that's what it is. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know if anyone knows the answer, but it's just one of those things to think about. You wrote jokes for Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg at the Golden Globes last year. What was that experience like?
It was really fun. They're really, really lovely, nice people. And that was my first time writing for a show where I wasn't the writer's assistant and I was like an actual staff writer. So that was really terrifying and exciting. And everyone in the room was very nice. So it was a fun environment of people.
When you write jokes for so many different people, how do you make your jokes align with their personalities, their comic personas?
Yeah, I've only mostly written for Seth and I guess Andy and Sandra. I see what you're saying. Yeah, because I wrote for like all the magazines and websites also have different perspectives. I think you sort of get a sense of not only the rhythm of how they speak, like Reductress, for instance, is very different from the New Yorker type thing. But there's also a sense of what kind of subject matters that those people or websites find particularly compelling. And I think once you know both of those things, the rest of it can still be me writing and what I think is funny. And it's sort of more just like of trying to find the overlap in the Venn diagram and just like packaging it in their voice. Yeah.
What advice would you have for someone who's looking to get into the world of comedy?
Just go for it. Yeah. I feel like people are always, and I was this way too, where I just didn't know how to get started. And then I realized, oh, you can just write stuff online and you can amass, you know, a lot of published things that way. You can meet other people that way. So whatever you want to do, you should go for it. And there's also no right way to go about it. I feel like before, maybe everyone felt like they needed to do improv or they needed to do stand-up or whatever, but you should just pick the one you genuinely like and do it a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. That's all for today. This episode was written, hosted, and produced by William Yuengi. You've been listening to Mumble Jumble, a WKCR News production. For more information about our podcast and WKCR News, please visit WKCR.org. Thank you for listening. See you next week.